And this is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM, Wellitson, Ukiah, and K201 HR 88.1 Fort Bragg. And good evening. I'm back an hour later, and we're here with Mendo Matters, Mendocino Matters on KZYX. And tonight we're all about art, artists, and Mendocino. We're going to be talking to people from the American Craft Council that's holding the largest juried indoor craft show on the West Coast in San Francisco this weekend, the 3rd through the 5th. We'll be talking to Cynthia Myers, who's the Wind Song Artist of the Year, and Jorgen Kvinsland, who is an artist who makes doors. Then we'll talk about how art came to Mendocino and the role of the Art Center of Mendocino, and then your calls here on KZYN. We're going to be talking about art, and we're going to be talking about artists. I'm Paul Lambert, and this is Mendocino Matters. I originally found out about this because the American Craft Council is having the show in San Francisco. And what makes it unusual, and we'll get into more depth than that, is this isn't just a show of handcrafted work. It's a show where 20,000 people asked to be included, and only 230 people were accepted, including four people from Mendocino County. And we'll be talking with two of them. First, we're going to talk to Pam Diamond. And Pam is a member of the executive committee from the American Craft Council. And, well, let's just go ahead and hear what she's got to say.
A little bit about the American Crafts Council. I know you started in the late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah, what we call ourselves finally now is a 70-year-old startup. You know, people know our shows very well. As you know, we have five marketplaces around the country. The distinguishing factor of American Craft Council shows, we were the first to be a juried show. And what that means is that we have peer reviews of all the different categories, and it's like 23 different categories of fine craft that you will see at any of our shows. And, you know, just because an artist may have done one of our shows for 10 years or 20 years, if they're not on their game, just like an Olympian, and I've been immersed in that the last couple of days, they may not get into the show. There are no guarantees. And what they love about it is that it really does keep them fresh and always, you know, reinventing themselves. And you're going to see the highest quality of work at any one of our shows. But what's wonderful is there's a variety of price points. So for seasoned collectors anywhere, just a new collector, there's something for everyone.
Tell me how the jury process works.
Well, it's artists will submit. In the old days, it was their slides, and now it's their digital images. The jurors are gathered from around the country. They can be gallery owners or teachers that teach fine art, peers. It's just a really good group of people that are looking at things in the field that they know best, whether it be jewelry or ceramics or hand-blown glass. And there are thousands of people that apply to the shows. And in our smaller shows, only, you know, a little over 200 artists actually get a spot on the show floor. So they're looking for definitely the quality. They're looking for innovation. It has to be handmade. It has to be made by the artist's hand. And at every one of our shows, which I think is unique, we have an educated audience because we've been educating for years with our National American Craft Magazine that covers the whole field. And we've had the library, which is now digitized, where people can access this from all over the world. They will always see from emerging to seasoned artists. So it's just this nice variety of what is classic, what is on trend right now. You know, just the gambit.
What is the mission of the American Craft Council?
Well, it's to champion craft. We do it in a variety of ways. I think we're championing craft in action by reporting out on the field, by elevating the field and its importance and relevance in people's life. I mean, let's face it, it is a human instinct to create. And the new team is just all about accessibility and honoring the continuum of that creative process. We really want to encourage people to go make something happen. Go make something. You know, we're staring at computers all the time. Get into your studio, make something. It's so uplifting to do that. So, and we, our education programs, I don't know if you're familiar with School to Market, where we literally are, oh, it's wonderful. It's a program. We're working with the California College this year, CCA, and it's giving their students the entire experience of what it takes to not only make something to bring, but to bring it to market. So building your booth and, you know, how do you visually display that to be pleasing? How do you talk to people about your work? How do you follow up with your work? How do you let people know that you're showing your work? All these things that you need to know in today's world to be in the business of making, if that's truly what your calling is. So, there's mentor programs. Our College of Fellow program has been going for many, many years, and some of our gold medalists are again, household names, Jack Wadore Larson, Dale Chihuly, Charles Ames, just amazing, amazing names.
Do you have membership? Tell me about
that. Absolutely, we do. We are a member organization, and we have over 29,000 members currently and growing. We've been growing at a rate of about 14%. The magazine is really spectacular, and it's starting to get out into mainstream circulation because it's such a beautiful publication. And it, again, it deals with that creative process, and it's speaking about some of our show artists. And our marketing team does a lot of work with the show artists, which really wasn't done as much before, just to let people know about their work and the inner workings. So we're really attracting more and more members that want to be part of this creative community. It really is about that. It's people liking to hang out with people that are like-minded. And I think the console is really part of the whole, you know, value system that's in the culture right now. If you know what I'm speaking about, I mean, young people really value things that are made by hand, where they know the source. I mean, and it's always, they say, it skips a generation, but all these, this value system is coming back, and you could put one of our 60, 70, 80-year-old artists together with someone that's 20 or 30, and there's no difference except a few years in terms of their thinking and the way they're living their lives and what they care about. Part of the slow food movement, you know, it's all connected right now. It's pretty wonderful to see this. It's adding a lot of vibrancy to the field.
That is great, Pam. And I very much appreciate your making this call. So thank you again.
And we're back. And that was Pam Diamond of the American Craft Council talking about how they do what they do and why they do it. What we're doing now is talking about artists and artists like Cynthia Myers. And Cynthia is an artist who lives on the coast in Mendocino, and she does sand-carved art glass using a sand pencil, I suppose, with a compressor that shoots bits of sand onto glass and carves it out. Her designs feature floral and animal themes, and each image is etched with meticulous detail. And they're supposed to be beautiful. And her award-winning wine bottle, which won the Winsong Artist of the Year Award, is showing at the Mendocino Savings Bank in Mendocino. So you can go over and take a look at that. I called her up, and I wanted to know how she got interested in, how did she become a sandblasting artist?
Tell me, how did you become a sand etch artist?
Yeah, glass glass etch artist. I saw someone sandblasting glass in my mom and dad's barnyard. They live in Alexander Valley and grow wine grape. And so I saw that this woman down there, her compressor broke, so she came to borrow my father's. And she had on goggles and gloves and raincoat and boots, and dust and sand was flying everywhere as she's sandblasting this huge piece of glass for a restaurant. And I just was like, I want to do that. So she let me use her equipment, and I taught myself.
How old were you?
Gosh, I think I was about 38.
Okay.
Sounds like I was a kid, but I was.
Had you been an artist prior to that?
I have always been an artist. I've always been drawing, never making a living at it, but I did macrame and weaving and pottery, and I was actually teaching myself stained glass and so I already knew I loved glass when I saw the sandblasting.
What is it that you love about glass?
I love how the light travels through it, and the colors of it and the shapes. And what I really like about my etching is that I change the shape of the glass by cutting the lip off the top, which is really my signature. And I also bend light with the sandblasting. So as the light travels through the vase, I've changed the look of it, and the light reflects off of it and through it.
Is your work primarily pieces that people can buy or installations that are used in a home or a restaurant or a building?
I do both. Primarily, I sell vases and wine glasses and bud vases and bowls. And I have the glass itself is all blown specifically just for me. So the shapes and the colors I have are made exclusive for me.
What's the difference between ordinary glass etching and sand etching?
I'm not sure. Maybe some ordinary glass etching might be just done with acid etch, so it doesn't have the detail, whereas because I carve into the glass, I cut the lip off the top, and I give each feather or each flower petal some depth and detail to it, so I'm actually carving into it. And then there's engraving that's done with a wheel. I don't do that.
Are you a native of Mendocino?
Pretty much. My parents actually met each other on the beach. I live in Little River, just 2 miles south of Mendocino. My parents met each other on the beach down there in 1947, and I've been coming up here ever since I was born for camping, and I moved up here close to 20 years ago.
Is there anything specific about Mendocino and the coast that makes it good for you as an artist?
Yeah, exactly, because I am so inspired by all of the nature and the beauty that surrounds me. I etch whales and dolphins and turtles, and then I have a beautiful flower garden, and I have all these flowers that I grow, and then I draw them and put them on the vases. And so I'm definitely inspired by nature, and you almost can't find a more beautiful place to live than Mendocino. I'm so fortunate.
What is your process around designing an installation?
First, I converse with the homeowners, and they decide where they want to put a piece of glass, like, for example, maybe their front door or the side lights to their door or a shower wall. You know, and then the things that they like about my artwork and what interests they have. So, for example, I have some people in Northern California that have bears crossing a creek, and then they wanted the pine trees and the mountain, Mount Shasta, in the background, and that's where their home is. And then I have people here on the coast where I have etched abalone and mussels, so a whole underwater scene with the abalone and mussels and bull kelp and seaweed.
What kind of pieces are you showing at the Art Craft Show on August the 3rd and 4th?
There I'm going to be showing my blown glass vases and bud vases and bowls and a lot of wine glasses.
Could you describe one or two of them that you're going to be taking?
Yes, I have actually Brian Goldenberg, who owns Slow Burn Glass, blows glass for me, and he will be at the ACC show. I didn't get his booth number from him today, but he'll be at the show, and he blows these beautiful round 12-inch bowls for me. And I put the Great Blue Heron on there, and I cut, so I'll cut the lip around the wing tips, which will stand up above the top of the vase, and I'll cut around the top of his head. And then each feather, I sandblast one feather at a time, and I put trees along the back. It's really one of my best-selling pieces, and it's absolutely stunning. It's a beautiful piece.
It sounds terrific.
It's that, on my website, it's that gold, round gold one.
Oh, yes. Yeah. How long does it take you to do a piece like that?
I hate that question.
Oh, sorry.
No, I'm just kidding. But that's the one question everyone asks me. So my answer now is it takes me maybe 15 hours, 12 to 15 hours to do one piece.
Do you work on several different pieces at a time?
I do. I kind of try to make an assembly line. So I will, my process is that I tape the vase first. So I cover it with sandblasting resist tape. I draw my artwork on the piece, and then I cut through the tape with a razor blade. So now I've created a stencil, basically, on the vase. And I will pull the tape up at the top and sandblast right at the edge of the tape and cut the lip off. And then I'll start sandblasting my piece. The brighter the color, the deeper I've etched. So I pull up one feather at a time and sandblast one feather at a time on the Great Blue Heron, or on a flower, one flower petal at a time, and I leave some shadowing in between, so there's little places. It just gives it a lot of depth and dimension.
So this is all done by hand?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And how thin a stream can you get on your etching?
If I can cut a little tiny strip of tape out and pull it up and get a very, very thin line. But if I'm just sandblasting an open area, I have a very small nozzle on my sandblaster, so I could probably get a quarter inch wide. If you're painting, you're leaving something on the surface of your paper, for example. And as I etch, I leave the etched portion. So I'm actually scratching the glass with sand, but creating artwork with it. So it's sort of like airbrush painting, but with sand.
Wow.
And then the clear places on the vases where the glass remains clear is where the tape always stays until I'm finished.
Are you in any galleries in Mendocino where people can see your work
sure.
Can't come to the craft show?
Yes, in Mendocino I'm in Panache, P-A-N-A-C-H-E, gallery on Main Street.
In Mendocino?
In Mendocino. I'm in Light Opera Gallery in San Francisco.
Have you won other awards?
I am actually this year. We have a fundraiser up here in Mendocino for our local hospital, and it's called Wine Song. And there are 70 artists that are involved in this fundraiser, and I've been donating a huge wine bottle that I etch, and then they fill it up with wine, and it auctions off at the live auction in September. So this year, I am the very first 3D artist, then I am Artist of the Year. So there will be posters everywhere.
Oh, marvelous.
Yeah, I'm very, very proud. It really is an honor. So I'm Wine Song Artist of the Year this year.
What do you mean by a 3D artist?
Well, it's always been painting. For the last 25 or 30 years, it's always been a painting.
Well, how terrific.
Yeah.
And that's Cynthia Myers, who is one of the artists at the Arts Crafts Council show. 230 artists, everything made by hand. And several of them from Mendocino. Next person we have up is Jorgen Kvinslin. And in case you want to Google him, that is Y-O-R-G-E-N. And last name, K-V-I-N-S-L-A-N-D. He makes doors. And he's the head of a collective called Artstruct. And he talks about a door as the focal point of a dwelling or a building. And it sets the mood and the entire feeling for someone who is coming into that building.
Originally from Boulder Creek in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Then I moved to Mendocino in 1990 and left to Seattle and was involved with the glass movement and have been back for 9 years, I think, to Mendocino County.
Terrific. You mentioned that a front door is a focal point of a dwelling or building. It sets the mood for the inhabitant or visitor. What are the different techniques that you use to make a door inviting or unusual that someone wouldn't find at Home Depot?
I work with different artists to create a door that kind of speaks to what the building is about. And an example of that would be the botanical gardens in Fort Bragg, which I built a couple of years ago, and I played off of the theme of the garden in terms of, you know, that they're really interested in the sky, the land, and the plants. And I was able to use different species of wood, but then also different artists to kind of play into the thematic botanical garden idea.
So other people design the doors that you build?
No, I design the doors. And I build them and I compose. I make a composition of various artists, including myself. I make artwork, but sometimes I work with other artists in terms of, you know, if it's material that I'm not a professional at. My biggest goal is to have the door speak in the strongest way possible. An example of that would be if you have a feather and you make the feather out of bronze, it's going to say something much different than if you made the feather out of glass. And so the material is going to speak for the idea that you're trying to get across. So I work with other artists when the idea that I'm trying to get across it's not within my technical means, because another priority for Artstruct and me as being the primary artist, I call myself the principal artist. And so as the principal artist, I'm basically just trying to make a door that speaks the best.
Now, I noticed that you also work with hot glass.
Yes.
So you make all the glass for the windows?
No, not necessarily. Again, sometimes the glass is something that a style that I'm not going to work in. If I was to make a door with leaded glass, for a more historical or a leaded glass scenario, I might design the window and have it made. Or if the style that's desired is of another style, I would have someone make something and work collaboratively to build it into the design. So I blow glass and I work with cast glass. And if sheet glass is more appropriate for the door, then I don't manufacture sheet glass.
But you do add metal, glass, bronze, and other things to your doors.
Yes, ceramic and the wood is very important. And so I select wood that is both kind of to the theme of the door, as well as with a story to it. I find trees and I mill them up special for the doors, and with the different types of wood, it'll have a different feel. A lot of the doors I work with the sinker wood from the local river valleys, and so that wood is special. And
so you don't go to a lumber yard and buy some wood to make a door?
No, I see. Have I ever done that for a door? I do not think so. I generally source the material on my own, taking it from logs. I found a log in Paradise up by Chico that had fallen on someone's driveway, and it was black oak, and you know, so I think even a log that fell across someone's driveway, if it's the right grain, then it really makes sense for the door, then that's the material I use. So I try to stockpile wood that I find. You know, it's almost impossible to buy wood of the quality level that you would use in a door at the lumber yard, actually, because most of the trees that are milled up are not, at this point, are not a tight enough grain pattern, and they didn't grow in a straight forest. So it's actually quite difficult to find really true wood. It's also quite difficult to find wood with character to it.
Would you say that living in Mendocino helps you as an artist because you can find the wood here?
Yes, I'm using the sinker redwood from the river valleys a lot of times for the material, and that's pretty special. I have a job coming up for a place in Los Angeles that is built with actually sinker wood from Louisiana. It's cypress sinker wood. So if I'm going to work with redwood or madrone or yew, I would work with wood from here locally. Although I do source my wood around the country and the world. There are just so many species of trees that have different looks that it's nice to kind of not be totally restricted by the wood in the region, although I do like working with local materials.
What is sinker wood?
Well, 100 years ago, when San Francisco was burned down, the logs were taken out of this area, and they were brought down into the river valleys and floated down the rivers. And some of the trees were just too dense, and they sunk to the bottom of the river, and they got stuck in the mud. And so back in the 80s here, some people went down into the rivers and started dredging these logs out of the rivers, and the rivers were quite clogged up with the logs, so in a way it's great for the fish to bring the logs out, although temporarily it stirs up the sediment and kind of makes it a murky river. So Fish and Game has deemed that it's not good for the river because the process of getting them out is a little harsh for the fish, although that's sort of debatable because then it frees up the river and so that the spawning habitat is kind of rehabilitated. So those logs were brought out in the 80s, and I think they ceased to be released from the river bottoms in, like, 91. And so there's a finite amount of these sinker logs, which are sort of impregnated with salts, and they get a streaky pattern, and some become very dark. It's one-of-a-kind special wood from trees that were growing at the time of, you know, the native tribes here in Mendocino, from the time that they were around. And not only that, but the redwood region is so small in general, there are not very many redwood trees. So the wood is basically a finite finite amount of material. And I've been sort of keeping in touch with where the last of it is around the county, and I definitely have sources, and as long as that material is available, I'll build doors with it because it's such a special material.
Was it difficult for you to be taken seriously as an artist living in Mendocino or making doors?
I've never had that problem at all. I think that when people see the doors, they appreciate the value of the door, and it's perhaps not a material that some city people would like, although others would really like it. So I think even though Mendocino is sort of in the middle of nowhere, the product itself speaks.
Why did you choose to come back to Mendocino rather than stay up in the Seattle area, if I may ask?
Well, Mendocino is a pretty amazing place. I came here to have some clarity from the city. I think the commotion down there, it kind of, for me as an artist, it's just a little too much. It kind of clouds my vision, and I'm able to think a little clearer out here in Mendocino, and I have children as well, and like I say, Mendocino is kind of foggy. You can't grow a tomato here very well, although you can grow children here very well, because it's such a special, clean, clear environment.
And that's Jorgen Finslin, the door artist, who is also going to be at the Art Center show. When I first, I love his clarity of his process. Both he and Cynthia really understand what they do. And it's not this kind of mad artist slapping paint on the canvas or whittling something away. There's a very conscious idea about what they're doing. And I love that about artists and about singers and songwriters. When I first started researching arts in Mendocino, someone on the announce list at msn.org told me that if I was interested in Mendocino as an art place, I should find out more about Bill Zacha. Now, this came to me, really marvelous story. Bill Zacha, as probably a lot of you know, and some of you don't, was, I think, a 25, 27-year-old artist in 1957 and lived in the Bay Area. And he came up to Mendocino in 1957 when it was virtually a ghost town. Its population was dwindling, and he took it as his goal in life to create a community for artists. In a Look magazine article in 1962, he says, "When I first saw Mendocino, I became excited. It had an unusual, almost unearthly quality about it. Pure, quiet, unsullied. I knew I could help the place, help it get back on its feet, and make it a place where people would get a simple but profound satisfaction out of living." And Mendocino is now one of the most talked about art centers in Northern California and probably in the United States. And in the process of doing all that, he helped found the Art Center of Mendocino. And I've got Liliana Zuna, the board president of the Art Center, if all goes well when I press this button. And we're going to talk about the Art Center of Mendocino. Liliana?
Yes.
Oh, it worked. This is community radio. How are you this evening?
Very good, thank you.
Good. Now, were you in Mendocino when Bill Zacha was here?
I used to come up for visits at the time when Bill was still at the Art Center, but I didn't know Bill personally.
Uh-huh. And he was the founder of the Art Center, or one of
he
the
was.
Founders.
He was the founder. He and his wife, Jenny, first in, initiated the idea and got it going, but they had help from other local artists who were here at the time. Miriam and Ray Rice were two very, very large names in the firmament here at that time. And they really helped Bill get the art center going.
So if the question is, did the artists come here because they liked Mendocino, or did they come here because they could sell art because the village of Mendocino was a good tourist attraction? It's the former, isn't it?
I think the reason they came was twofold. First, this is an area of unparalleled beauty, and it's certainly an inspirational place for artists. And second, the Art Center was here. There was an organization here that was interested in nurturing artists. And the two worked together to help create the artist community as it is today. There were a few artists here then when Bill first started the Art Center. I don't want to make it sound as though it was devoid of art before that, but really it was after the Art Center was developed that we began to see a growth in the number of artists that lived here, and consequently the art galleries started to appear and the tourists started to come. We've been known as an artist community for many, many years. It was a multiplicity of things that came together in just the right way.
Now, earlier I had asked you about the music and theater parts of the Art Center, and I had believed that they were more recent than the artwork. And you corrected me with a wonderful story about what people used to do on the weekends there.
Well, when the Art Center was first founded in 1959, you have to realize that there was no television here. You could not have a television here. It was useless. And that stayed pretty much the same until, probably the late 80s. Mm. But until then, there was no electronic entertainment. And so people made their own entertainment. And in the very early days of the Art Center, what is now the main gallery used to be a big patio with a huge wood-burning stove out there. And artists, musicians used to come on the weekends and congregate and play music there. It wasn't just the weekends, because the Art Center in those days used to stay open until 9 o'clock at night.
Mm.
So it was a gathering place. It was more a community center in those days than it is today. And it was just sort of by necessity. It was a place that had enough room, enough space, and enough interest to allow these things to happen. And then the theater was actually originally built as a children's theater, which is why there's no real backstage in our theater. We have rooms on either side of the stage where the actors have to get ready. And if they have to make an entrance from the opposite side of the stage from the green room, they actually have to go outside and go around the back of the building and come in on the other side of the building.
Hopefully it's not raining.
It was built as a children's theater, and we used to have a lot of children's theater classes there. And in the 70s, late 60s and 70s, there were many productions that went on at the theater. So this has all been going on for 40, 45, 50 years.
Wow, that's terrific. Liliana, if it's okay with you, I'm going to open up the phone lines and see if anyone wants to talk about art and artists in Mendocino and the particular qualities of art, and whether it's still as all viable for artists today in the 21st century as it was in the 20th, and have them ask some questions of you, if you don't mind. So,
if I can answer them.
Okay. 456-9991. 456-9991. Come on, give us a call if you're an artist or someone who's interested in art, whether you're a well-known artist or just somebody starting out. All right. Hello, you're on the air with Liliana Kuna and Paul Lambert. What's your name?
Hi. I'm delighted by your show. It's so nice to hear something about the arts on the radio.
Thank you. What's your first name?
Jesse.
Thank you, Jesse. What would you like to say?
Well, I've always been an artist, but I seem to have this brain that gets all lost in the object itself and doesn't seem to connect too well to what people want to buy. So any advice,
Liliana,
that the artist can offer about gauging what people like? Because it doesn't seem to matter to me what I decorate or do or make. I love it all. It's not a compromise of virtue to decorate somebody's couch. I'll do it. So anyway, I'll take your answer off the air so that the phone lines aren't tied up.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm, bye-bye.
I'm not really sure how one... I'm an artist myself, and when I work, I just work from the sense of what pleases me. I don't know what especially makes something more saleable than another piece of art. I would say maybe if you were to perhaps go into some galleries and look at the trends, look at the kinds of things that other artists are doing, and that might give you some direction. But I,
do you also?
I don't know if that would give you personal satisfaction. And I think that for most artists, when they create, that's what it's about.
Liliana, do you think it might have to do with having a large vocabulary or understanding of artwork? Because the more you see, the more you understand?
Well, I don't really know. I mean, when we're talking about saleability, we're talking about commercialism, and that's always difficult for an artist. You paint from your heart, or you create from your heart, or your spirit, your vision. And I just, honestly, I personally couldn't put a finger on, from my own work, what makes some things saleable and others not.
Well, let me mention something. In the conversation with Pam Diamond from the American Craft Council, she did mention that they have a mentoring program as well as a program with a college in California that takes an artist through the whole process of creating, packaging, learning how to find galleries. So I would suggest that Jesse try American Craft Magazine. All right, another caller.
Okay.
Hello, you're on the air. What's your first name?
Hi, this is Sally.
Hi, Sally. What's your question or comment?
Well, the Art Center sounds great. I was just wondering what was coming up or what's good for the public. We're here for a week on vacation.
Oh, okay.
Sunday afternoon we actually have one of our concerts in the main gallery. Our registrar is a young lady named Maria Lisa Kay, and she is an opera singer with pipes that are unbelievable. So if you want to hear some really spectacular music, I suggest you come Sunday afternoon to the Art Center. Other than that, we have a very terrific plein air art show that just went up. All of the members of our local plein air artist group have put up work in the main gallery. And in the Nichols Gallery, we have a partial showing of the Jan Stussy show.
And also our announcements here for the station say that Partners Gallery is holding a reception for its exhibit, Stones in Their Mouths, tomorrow night, 5 p.m. in Fort Bragg. And there's also at the North Coast Artists Gallery a reception at the same time, also in Fort Bragg. So, two or three things to do. Liliana,
yes.
How are you supported? Is it memberships or is it fees for classes or education? I should mention that I have a friend who lives in San Miguel de Allende who comes here, probably 3,000 or more miles, to attend classes because he and his wife have been coming here since the 70s.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, what was the first part of your
question? The first part of the question was, how are you funded? Is it memberships or is it for fees for coming to different shows? And I'm going to mention the number again, 456-9991.
Well, you know, the Art Center is a 501c3, and our mission is to provide art education. So I think anybody who's been involved in any sort of an educational endeavor understands that education does not pay for itself. So the class fees and that we charge just pay for the basic. It covers the instructors' fees and the facility fees, etc.
Okay.
So what we have to do is we do a lot of fundraising. We do have members who pay membership fees to us, which really help to support us. And I would say to anybody out there who is waiting to renew their membership, please do so because we rely on that steady source of income.
We've got somebody.
We also put on fairs and summer fair, fall fair, and garden tour. Those are our three major fundraisers that we do every year.
Oh, that's terrific. We have somebody on the line. Let me introduce him or her. Hi, what's your first name?
Hi, my name is Anish. I'm a metalsmith, and I believe Liliana knows me. I do. Yes. What I wanted to mention here that nobody's mentioned so far is the incredible program that the Mendocino Art Center has for artists in residence. I learned metalsmithing in Europe. I was there from 1985 to 2004. And I came back to be an artist in residence for a whole year at the Mendocino Art Center. And they have a great program where it allows people in ceramics, jewelry, painting, many different forms of art, to get a chance to know their peers, to show their work, to learn how to show their work. And it's a great program. And I went through it, and at the end, I wound up staying in Mendocino. I live in Willits.
Oh, that's terrific.
And I'm actually, I actually do have a new set of new showing of my jewelry in the art center, in the gallery shop. And I also just completed the wonderful art fair that we just had, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, on July 14th and 15th. But anyways, it's just wonderful to have that kind of support and to know that the Art Center is there for us.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much, Anish.
Okay, bye-bye. Speaking of Willits, the Willits Center for the Arts is holding an opening reception for its show of paintings by Robert Parmenter on Saturday, August 4th at 5 p.m. So lots of things to do with the arts. When you say that you rely on donations, are the donations in the form of memberships or in the form of thanks, we needed that?
We have both memberships and just straight out donations.
What does it cost to become a member, and what do you get by being a member, besides supporting?
For an individual, it costs $50 a year to be a member, and you get discounts on classes if you're a Mendocino County resident. We waive the registration fee for the class, and we give a 15% discount. If you're a member, you get a 10% member at large, in other words, not in Mendocino County, you get a 10% discount, and we waive the registration fee. We also have discounts at various lodging establishments, and art supply stores and other stores are in the area.
Well, that sounds terrific. Thank you
And also, if you're a member, you have to be a member to exhibit your work at the Art Center, whether you do it in the gallery gift shop or as part of an exhibit.
All right. Well, I'm quite linear myself, but there is a member of my family who is quite artistic, and I'll certainly bear that in mind myself.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about art and artists in Mendocino.
Thank you for the invitation. I appreciate being able to talk about the Art Center.
Well, I'll stop out there sometime and say hello in person.
Please do.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
You know, it's nice to have a show where we're not talking about politics and we're not talking about something where the someone's got a strong opinion and hates somebody else for having a strong opinion. It's been a lot of fun for me here. I want to tell you before I go that the Matheson Performing Arts Center is going to be playing traditional Scottish music this Sunday at 7:30 p.m. And its music has been featured on Oak and Thorn, the Sunday morning Celtic music program here on KZYX. It's David Brewer and Rebecca Lunicki who are going to be playing there. And it is an event which is a benefit for Mendocino County Public Broadcasting. And we need your help. We need new members and old members coming back. And I have had a very nice time with you this evening. I will see you in 2 weeks, the 16th, and we will be talking to folks about an orphanage that in Haiti that